From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A 16-year-old boy from Guatemala named Carlos Gregorio Hernandez has become the latest casualty in President Donald Trump's war on immigrants. Hernandez died this past Monday after apparently succumbing to the flu. He had been in Border Patrol detention for a week. There have been at least half a dozen cases since just last December of immigrant children dying in U.S. custody. The latest phenomenon after last summer's debacle of thousands of children ripped away from their parents. Acting Homeland Security Secretary Kevin McAleenan faced the ire of lawmakers during a panel hearing on Wednesday over the children's deaths. Congresswoman Nanette Barragan, who has traveled to the U.S.-Mexico border and witnessed Trump's immigration policies firsthand, called McAleenan's record despicable. We turn now to Christine Newman Ortiz. She is the executive director of the group Voces de la Frontera, an immigrant rights group based in Wisconsin. Welcome to the program, Christine.
Thank you so much.
So first, let's talk about why these deaths are happening. I said half a dozen deaths before this one 16-year-old boy. There was another 16-year-old boy also from Guatemala who died, a 6.5-year-old. There's been a 2.5-year-old. There was the 7-year-old Jacqueline McKean who died several months ago. Why, in your understanding, is this happening?
I think there's a total disregard by the Trump administration for their lives, that the only reason that this is being brought out is that there are people out there who do care about their lives and who are making public the kind of human rights violations that are happening and escalating under the Trump administration. That what we're seeing is that the part of Trump's campaign, as was mentioned at the beginning, a war on immigrants and refugees, has been to deny asylum seekers their legal right to come to the United States and be processed in a way that keeps their dignity and their health and their families intact. And as part of this crackdown on people who are fleeing persecution and fleeing conditions, which is their international U.S. right to do, he has really tried to implement through his administration these policies of intentional family separation and filling these detention centers, which some people have called modern day internment camps, which are not respecting their rights, and certainly at a minimum their health rights. But we've seen incidents of parents who are trying to commit suicide. You had the hunger strikes of the parents because who are still being held. So it is just a continuous chapter of human rights violations, and why it is so critical that it be challenged in the streets with the kind of protests that we saw, and in Congress as it is being challenged, because we cannot become desensitized to what's happening.
Christine, the boy in question that I mentioned had been held by Border Patrol for a week before he died. Isn't there a 72-hour limit for how long Border Patrol can hold children in custody before they have to transfer them, at the very least, to a certified shelter, if not releasing them to a sponsor in the country?
Yes, that is correct. And that is something that they didn't do. And it's something that we're continuing to see, even here in Wisconsin, with just ongoing treatment of people in detention centers as well, not just minors, but people who should be getting care and are being denied that care because the detention centers are so full. And as part of this increased escalation, not just on the border, but also on the interior.
Let's actually take a listen to what Congresswoman Nanette Barragan said on Wednesday during this hearing at the House Homeland Security Committee, where her and other members of Congress who are on that committee demanded from Acting Secretary Kevin McAleenan why there have been so many deaths.
Well, it's disturbing. You're not following the 72-hour rule, as we know, because you just had a 16-year-old child die that was being held for a week. People are being turned away at the border when they present themselves at the ports of entry. How do I know? I've been there. You have agents who are treating people like animals and in person telling them how terrible they are. How do I know? I've been there firsthand. We just saw the text messages. And an agent then hits a migrant? Is this how to be treating people who are escaping violence? Of course not. So why do people think this administration is intentionally harming children? Well, let's just look at the facts. Look at all the lies. Look at the harm done to children and their mental health. Look at the children that are dying under your watch. And you just said, Mr. Secretary, you are proud of your record. That is despicable to say. You should not be proud of a record of having five children die under your watch. I yield back.
And that is Congresswoman Nanette Barragan, who has visited the border, has advocated very strongly for immigrant rights. She's from Southern California. Christine Newman Ortiz is my guest. She's executive director of Voces de la Frontera. Christine, Congresswoman Barragan was suggesting that the deaths of children in Border Patrol custody are intentional. And I suppose one can't fault her for arriving at that conclusion, given that the family separation that happened last year was first, basically, the Trump administration asserted that those were not intentional separations. But of course, it became very clear very quickly that that was exactly the point, that they were creating policies out of thin air with the express desire to separate families because they thought it would be a deterrent. So is it too, far? Is it going too far to suggest that they are creating conditions where children are more likely to die because they think that might be a deterrent? I mean, I'm kind of shocked that I'm even going there, but you know, this is the Trump administration, and maybe nothing is too extreme for them.
I believe that whether that's intentional or intentional neglect that leads to death, it is criminal activity, and it is a human rights violation. It is unacceptable, and that's why it is so critical. I mean, for the public in general, not just Congress or immigration rights advocates, but at the heart of the Trump administration has really been this escalated attack, this xenophobic attack on immigrants and refugees, and a continuous test of our humanity. What are we willing to accept? And I do think that that is intentional, that they have been implementing policies that have no regard absolutely for the humanity of immigrants and refugees. And they continue to cross lines around denying them, you know, their international human rights, violating constitutional rights. And certainly, you know, we know that this isn't coming out of anywhere, but this kind of like propaganda campaign is also tied really to an ideology of white nationalism. I mean, you have advisors such as Stephen Miller, people who are within the administration, Chris Kobach, who have ties to, who share a white nationalist ideology. And that is dangerous. I mean, they're using the machinery, frankly, of administrations past to really escalate this war, but in a way that I think is unique and is dangerous, and that it is much more aggressive, much more escalated. And it really is asking a question of us as a country about, are we going to stand up in solidarity with immigrants and refugees and push back against what is a very xenophobic, racist campaign that is costing the lives of children and terrorizing entire families and communities, not just on the border, but in the interior. And
so let's talk about mm-hmm. the interior then, because that isn't getting as much attention. We have Border Patrol, which is the agency under Homeland Security that specifically addresses the border and apprehends and detains people at the border. And then you have ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, that has as its favorite pastime conducting raids around the country. These internal raids, of course, are not new. They're not unique to Trump. They have continued, I understand, under Trump, and your organization has rallied particularly around the case of one family in Wisconsin. Tell us a little bit about this family and what's happening.
This is very much connected to what we're seeing both at the border and with the changes within the DHS administration, that it's becoming the people who are coming in, being put in positions of power within DHS, continue to really represent this very, you know, this very, very hard line. And an example of that was that in this latest shuffle over the administration was this contention that that they were going, what the Trump administration is proposing is even going too far. And it's in one of the proposals that came out was this operation to shock and awe, to carry out raids targeting parents and children, a specific policy of targeting immigrant families who had an order of deportation, who in the past, again, would have not have been considered any kind of priority for deportation, who are now, who would be a target, and that they would be carrying out a policy of shock and awe. So a very aggressive military operation to put these families in deportation proceedings. So we, that is not a theoretical thing in the future. It's kind of, it's been talked about, I think, in the mainstream media so far, but in here in Wisconsin, we really saw what clearly spells out a run at this, and that's the case of Pastor Wally Rendon. She is a student pastor who was doing ministry at a Racine, Wisconsin Emmaus Lutheran church there. Her family is from Chicago. She and her family, her husband and her daughter, fled Colombia. They were asylum seekers, and for like administrative reasons, their case was denied, but that is the basis of why they came to the United States. She was ran a Christian church back in Colombia and settled here, were not any kind of enforcement priority. And her daughter, who's DACA as well, was able to get DACA, were going about their daily lives when the daughter was pulled over by ICE agents while she also had her five-year-old daughter with her. Mm-hmm. Was told that she was being detained, that she could drive back to the house where she could make arrangements for her child, even though she was saying, "I'm DACA, I shouldn't be deported." And they said, "You have no rights." They went to the house, and then they came in with guns, again, very much a military style operation, handcuffed, and took the mother, the pastor, who was in her pajamas, the father, a family member who was the husband, excuse me, and the family member. And they targeted the whole family. And so this is exactly as that operation is, shock and awe, urban prior order of deportation. And again, this is a pastor. So someone who would not have, who's only been in service to the community. And they actually had an order of deportation on the DACA, on the daughter, and until it was brought to light because of people who were able to let folks know that she had she was under order supervision. She was told you can leave only to make travel arrangements, custody arrangements for your daughter, make travel arrangements. So their intention was to deport her. She was in deportation proceedings as well. Until it was brought to public light, they then, right prior to her ICE check-in, they dropped it. But now, as was earlier mentioned, the family member that was in a detention facility, he to get necessary medical care that he was not getting in the 2 weeks he'd been in detention, he signed a order of deportation so that he could get out and get medical care. Otherwise, he was going to die in detention. And so now where the fight is in this very highly profile case is that we're fighting to have Pastor Betty and her husband Carlos, who were moved now to a Illinois detention center, so farther from their community, There's now been put in through National Immigration Justice Law Center and a coalition of organizations that are working with the family, putting in an official request to stay the order of deportation and calling for an immediate release of the family. But it's an so this is a religious, it has sent shockwaves through the religious community, because this is a religious leader, highlights all the more how cruel these policies are, and how we would even pursue and use all these resources and aggression to go after a family that has been, on the contrary, exemplary in their service to the community.
So the daughter remains in custody. The parents are both have been detained and are in immigrant detention. And then you mentioned another family member who essentially allowed himself to be deported. I mean, didn't fight the deportation, I should say, simply because he wanted to get medical care. Is that the status? I mean, this is basically four members of the same family.
Yeah, it's four members of the same family.
Who had been living in the United States, presumably for many years.
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, in the case of the daughter, she does have DACA. They were trying to deport her, but only because it was brought to public light did they drop the order of deportation on a DACA recipient who should not be deportable. But this is an example of the ways that they really test, I think, what they can get away with. And in the case of, so right now, where that struggle is that it's to build public support, public pressure, to demand that the acting field director use prosecutorial discretion, which allows him to make an evaluation, Luis Zamora, the acting field director of ICE, to say, looking at the facts, you know, this is the pastor, Pastor Betty and her husband are good members of the community. She is a religious leader. She should not be deported and separated from her daughter, from her granddaughter, and they should go back to their congregation, back to their community. And so this is something that only with bringing back public pressure will this be used. And this is something important, obviously, not just for this family itself, which is scandalous that this is like what's happening right now, but also the prosecutorial discretion is something that needs to be fought for and achieved under this administration. Prosecutorial discretion allows always the acting field director to make an assessment to say, why are we wasting resources and time on people who are, on families, on working class families who are part of our community, and why are we terrorizing children and breaking up families and pushing people into poverty and filling up detention centers where people are dying? So that system exists. And in this case, we're asking the public to really raise their voice to rescue this family, and in that way, be a voice for so many others.
So you are suggesting that the family that has been targeted may be being scapegoated as almost a test case, and maybe there are other similar cases around the country, for the kind of policy that Stephen Miller has wanted Trump to take internally in terms of internal immigration enforcement. When we heard about the purge of top Homeland Security leaders such as Kristen Nielsen and others in early May, the Washington Post reported that purge was the result of them basically saying they didn't want to be part of, that it was going even too far for them, that Trump's advisor Stephen Miller wanted to see these coordinated raids in 10 cities around the country where there are undocumented immigrants living, where whole families, including parents and children, would be picked up in ICE raids, detained and deported. So this may be a microcosm, what we're seeing with this family may be a microcosm or a test case of where Trump wants to take the Homeland Security Department.
Absolutely, it fits the profile, exactly.
Wow.
And it's around the same time. Hmm. So it's not a plan in the future. I mean, this operation fits the operation that they want to carry out, with a goal of going after 10,000 families. This is a targeted for parents, children, and families, with a military type operation in the households, go after the entire family. in urban areas and for people who have a prior order of deportation. So again, in their case, they had an old order of deportation, but because of who they are and the movement pressure, they in the absence of immigration reform, a legal avenue, they didn't have it, but they were not a priority for deportation. And I think this is, whether they knew the circumstances of the family, I think the total disregard for the fact that it's a religious leader, the fact that there was a total disregard for that you had a DACA recipient. This fits the profile. It's the timing is right. And that's why this case is so important that we prevail. And what we're asking people to do now is to a couple of things. There really is, it's not clear what the timeline will be, but we really are asking people to step forward and do a couple of things. One is that on our website, we've posted where people can send organizational letters or leaders can send letters of support, again, directed to the acting field director, calling for their immediate release and dropping the deportation.
And that is vdlf.org. Mm-hmm. Yes, go ahead.
And then the other piece is that June 20th is the national day for migrants. And so on the buildup to that, in the weeks coming to that, the Lutheran Bishop of Wisconsin and this coalition of groups, Voices, Racine Interfaith Coalition, and others, the Lutheran Ministry, of which Pastor Betty was part of, are inviting people to organize a vigils outside of their local ICE offices. And we will have available on our website the letter, sample letter, if they need it, and they can obviously personalize it, but turning that into their local ICE offices, calling for the release of Pastor Betty and her husband, and for the use of prosecutorial discretion for them and others like them.
So let's also finally, in our conversation, discussing the new leadership that Trump is trying to bring into Homeland Security. We've just heard that Ken Cuccinelli II is someone that he is going to be installing into high-level position on in Homeland Security. This is a man who was a former attorney general of the state of Virginia. One of the things he did before he became attorney general in that state was sponsoring bills to force workers to speak English in the workplace. He tried to repeal birthright citizenship. He, too, like Trump, speculated that President Obama wasn't born in the U.S., and he actually doesn't have any immigration experience, but he certainly has strong views on immigration. We also heard that Kris Kobach, former Kansas state secretary, who's also a hardline anti-immigrant person, has been considered. It's not clear if he's still in the running. He wants to be Homeland Security Secretary. So Trump is trying to take those people who were overseeing family separation, overseeing children's deaths, and replace them with even more extreme leadership. I mean, that's terrifying.
It is. I mean, Federation for American Immigration Reform, which Southern Poverty Law Center has labeled as a hate group, as part of like this network of organizations that represent this far right white nationalist ideology and with ties to hate groups, other hate groups, basically applauded this and said, you know, great appointment. This guy is in line with our beliefs and practices. Mm-hmm. And this is, so it is, I mean, the other, it's dangerous in that they're also using the machinery that has been set up to continue to drive this agenda of trying to coerce or manipulate local government to be be part of this arm of immigration enforcement, mass immigration enforcement, which is institutionalizing racial profiling and turning it into this, you know, just a part of the machinery for mass deportation fueled by this hatred against immigrants without regard to human collateral or even like how, you know, this is depressing the economy, any of that, without any regard to that. And we're seeing this even play out because in the case of this new appointment, one of the things that he was a strong advocate for was in Virginia, supporting policies of turning local law enforcement into an arm of immigration, and also having the right to stop and profile people based on their appearance. So that's something that the Trump and his administration have been working hard to do in response to that, in terms of the post-2016 resistance that we have seen. Part of the fight has been these local state fights, these sanctuary movements, policies that have been passed that continue to push back against that and affirm we're not going to collaborate with ICE, that we're going to promote public safety at local law enforcement, that this is not the kind of communities that or the values that we hold as a right. community. So those fights continue to be critical. And I will say, I think it behooves us all to really continue to support the immigrant and refugee rights movement as a whole, in terms of all the kind of work that we're doing. Because it's very insidious. I mean, just here in Wisconsin, where again, they've tried to bring in the 287G program and we beat it back in Milwaukee. We've heard that how they're going around now and quietly talking to local law enforcement about bringing these agreements that change local law enforcement into immigration agents and trying to like make that a regional program. And there was an effort just recently that was successfully beat back of ICE trying to build what would have been the first private prison in a private detention center in Wisconsin. But again, trying to package it and sell it as saying, hey, this is going to create jobs, it's good for the economy. So it really is also about linking the struggle against mass incarceration with the struggle for immigrant justice, and is ever more entwined or necessary under the Trump administration. These are both movements that had been organizing, but they're so necessary to continue to build what has been built so far and unite against this.
Well, Christine, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link from our website to vdlf.org. Thanks so much and good luck to you.
Thank you.
My guest has been Christine Newman-Ortiz, Executive Director of Voces de la Frontera. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.